I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning and welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me here every weekday from 9 to 11 o'clock. This is where you will find a safe space for independent thinkers. And this is also the Free Republic of Mamaz, the Mike Madison Autonomous Zone. I've got news kind of across the board today. I was looking at my notes before I came on. We've got it all today. We got trade war. We got race war. We got tech censorship. We've got some Trump news. It's across the board of things that are going on. We got the cancel culture is coming for some pretty funny people, I got to say. You know, one of the great things we've seen over the past 3.5 years during Trump's presidency has been the boomerang effect of a lot of these left-wing initiatives. And how they will come home eventually to roost on the left themselves, whether it's anything like Me Too or the cancel culture that's coming for. This one, I got to say, I take some delight in. I don't care too much about the Hollywood people, to be honest with you. They can have their political opinions. Sometimes it's annoying enough for me to say I just can't really look at them the same. But, you know, I mean, they're just people and not always a very intelligent people. I'm not a shut-up-and-dribble person. I mean, I think it would be wildly hypocritical for me to come on the radio for 2 hours and then tell some other human being that nobody wants to hear your opinion because, to be honest with you, I mean, I just kind of staked out a little place on the radio and I give you mine every day. If LeBron James wants to say something, then LeBron James can say something. I don't care. He can't raise my taxes. He can't send our kids off to war. He's just got an opinion. Influential? Probably. Can I disagree with it? Absolutely. But I don't castigate people for it. But there is just one target of the cancel culture that appears to be in the crosshairs, we will see, that we'll get to later on in the show, that does make me smile because they've become just abhorrent during the Trump presidency. One pretty fascinating thing outside of anything political or topical is, I don't know if you have you seen this dust storm coming in from Africa. It looks like it is set to get here maybe in the next couple of days. They're showing it's hit Puerto Rico, apparently. This is from the deserts of Africa and apparently has made it 6,000 miles across the Atlantic to Puerto Rico, and we're expecting more of it now. There's some pretty startling satellite imagery of this thing as it just moves through. I don't know. I think Puerto Rico is saying it's their worst dust storm in 50 years. Maybe this happens from time to time. I just don't recall it in my lifetime, and it got me kind of thinking about what we're seeing right now. We've got the worst economy since the 1930s, worst economic numbers since the 1930s, and we may actually have some kind of a at least brief dust bowl situation here. There are documentaries about the 1930s that cover the dust bowl, and it is pretty amazing and really shows where we have come as a people, the hardships that we will endure now versus what we would endure less than 100 years ago. If you ever see these people who lived out on the plains during the Dust Bowl, these were not the homes that we're accustomed to today. A lot of these were basically just kind of slat houses, and their homes would just be invaded with dust constantly. Dirt on everything, dirt on the beds, dirt in the kitchens. They would show them, and there's no vacuum cleaner. These people that were living out on the plains during the Dust Bowl, there was no vacuum cleaner. A lot of times there wasn't even electricity run out to these areas. They're sweeping out dust, and you know how effective it is to sweep dust. Each time you get about, 60% of it swept up, and the rest of it goes into the air and settles right back down. It's just keeps going. But pretty stunning stuff. But I just found that pretty fascinating that there's a dust storm from Africa actually coming here. Last night, I ran across a headline, and then I saw this on Zero Hedge, and then I looked everywhere else, and I didn't see it reported. And I said, well, that's odd, because it's kind of a big story. Last night, it was reported that the China trade deal was over. And the markets over the past couple of years have risen every time out of the White House has come a tweet or a statement that says, good progress, meeting Friday, meeting next week, new round set up, things are looking good, and the market has responded. We ultimately ended up with what was considered a phase one deal, which was really not a whole lot. It was the Chinese offering to purchase a good number of agricultural products. We immediately went into impeachment and then COVID, and now apparently the Chinese have moved on and have started buying a lot of agricultural products from South America. But yesterday, the story said the White House trade advisor, Peter Navarro, said on Monday the trade deal with China is, quote, over. Quote, it's over, Navarro told Fox News in an interview when asked about the trade agreement. Reuters reported that Navarro said the turning point came when the U.S. learned about the spreading coronavirus only after a Chinese delegation had left Washington following the signing of the Phase 1 deal on January 15th. Quote, it was at a time when they had already sent hundreds of thousands of people to this country to spread the virus, and it was just minutes after wheels up when the plane took off that we began to hear about this pandemic, Navarro said. So this made a great number of waves. So I see this headline last night. Immediately, as the financial markets nerd I am, I click on to MarketWatch to see what the reaction in the futures market was, and they were down about 400 points in a straight dive. And as I say, I was looking at other news sites saying, why is nobody else reporting on the fact that the trade deal is over? Market's down 400 points. And as I'm looking around the internet, this is how ridiculous the stock market has gotten in this country. As I'm looking around for other headlines, I would say it took me 3 to 4, maybe 5 minutes to click through other news sites, try to read some stories, see anything connected to this pretty blockbuster headline that Wall Street was interpreting with a 400-point immediate drop in stocks that the trade deal was over. By the time I got back to MarketWatch, the futures market had rebounded almost 300 points. This was within minutes. It drops 400, it recovers 300, and apparently there was a retraction shortly after the stocks and the yuan plunged following Peter Navarro using the words, it's over, when discussing the U.S.-China trade deal. The White House advisor quickly backtracked, and see, this is all done at night. I'm telling you, if you have advanced knowledge of anything a Trump advisor or a tweet or a policy that comes out, if you have any advanced knowledge on this stuff and have got some trading account set up under your crazy cousin Kenny to trade on this stuff, you can just make a fortune. Navarro says the trade deal is over. If you short the stock market at that point, it's a winner. If you know that Peter Navarro is going to come out and backtrack with another statement saying, oh, no, my words were misconstrued, you know the market's going to shoot up. You cover your short positions, you take on long positions, you ride it back up, you get a double whammy. I mean, it is lather, rinse, repeat over and over and over again. I'm not insinuating that anybody's doing that. I don't have any evidence anyone's doing that. I'm just, I guess, saying I want to be able to do that. Maybe I could just start some kind of a service. I'll cut Trump in on it. I'll cut Navarro in it. I'll cut Larry Kudlow. I'll cut Steve Mnuchin. I'll cut everybody that's involved in on it a little bit. We just start a service where I put out something. Hey, in 2 minutes, this tweet's coming out. Trade accordingly. This is what Peter Navarro said. He claimed that the statement in the comment was taken wildly out of context. Quote, my comments have been taken wildly out of context. They had nothing at all to do with the phase one deal, which continues in place. I was simply speaking of the lack of trust we now have of the Chinese Communist Party after they lied about the origins of the China virus and foisted a pandemic upon the world. Now, that is some butt-covering statement. Unfortunately, the China trade deal is essentially over. It is not happening. The phase one, there's an awful lot of reports, and I'm probably boring people with this. Nobody really cares. They just want the headline. Trade deal's coming along great. We're finally putting China in their place. The phase one, they're not living up to their purchases of agricultural products. There was a story out yesterday about farmers who said, boy, we really thought it would be settled by then. The farmers will be bailed out again later. And phase one is essentially dead right now, apparently, with the numbers that China's buying from South America. Right now, there is no way in the world that they can live up to the commitments that they made to us, which were, a lot of analysts said, were unrealistic anyway. It's just... It is just pretty fascinating to see what has become of our stock markets, that on just a tweet or a headline or an utterance by Navarro, wild swings. The poor retail investor out there without any access to this insider information, you're just left along for the ride. So far, it's worked out pretty well, but I got to tell you, I think it's going to end in tears. I'm going to talk about a couple things about Trump. We're going to get into cancel culture, the race wars. the world's got plenty to talk about. I kind of pick and choose those things that I might have a unique view on and bring them to you here. So stay with me.
If you need an experienced lawyer that you can trust, contact the law firm of Danks, Miller & Corey. Our lawyers represent clients and small businesses across Mississippi. With over 100 years of combined legal experience, we have the expertise to handle even the most complex legal matters. When you need a lawyer to fight for you, don't compromise. Call Danks, Miller & Corey. You can reach us at 601-957-3101, 601-957-3101, or online at danksmillercorey.com.
To just finish up on trade deal stuff, you know, this is a. I appreciate the renegotiation with China. My position on the China trade deal has been different than a lot of other people. It's just that I give Trump credit for, even though it was disruptive, it's so rare for politicians to do anything that might cause short-term pain for actual long-term gain. That's one of the biggest problems we have. You know, a politician is such a coward. They won't go in front of a group of seniors and go, look, this thing's a mess. We're going to have to tinker around with Social Security some. You know, I understand seniors who've paid into the system for forever, but it was kind of your responsibility to also keep your eye on politicians who were looting Social Security. What did you think was going to happen? But they won't touch Social Security. They won't touch Medicare or Medicaid when everybody knows they're going bankrupt. There's going to have to be some short-term pain, but I guess seniors are very vindictive. And will vote anybody out of office that dares to touch their gravy train. Now, again, I guess gravy train, maybe that's an incendiary term. You did pay into it your whole life. Again, though, I say you had a responsibility to make sure there was somebody guarding that money for you, and you took your eyes off the prize. You let them take money out of Social Security and spend it on needless government programs. You sit by it, and you allowed that. Matter of fact, I've got a Breitbart story that I was stunned by that I think I may have time to get to today. Somebody who's counting on that, you know, they acknowledge, this is a conservative writer for Breitbart essentially saying, I don't care about the spending anymore as long as I get my Social Security, my Medicare. Just don't touch my checks and you can just spend all you want. What do I care? I mean, this is what's going on in conservative media now. It's just like, well, whatever. On the trade stuff, though, Iowa Soybean Association President Tim Bardole told NBC News that President Trump's signing of the Phase One trade deal had been a disappointment, and China's commitments as per the trade deal will likely not be met. Quote, at this point, it hasn't done near what we were hoping would happen with it, Bardole said. At this point, we're kind of running out of time for it to get close to the numbers we might have hoped. And the one thing, advice I might give soybean farmers, and I almost don't, I mean, they must be producing a lot because soy is in everything. Apparently the Chinese are the biggest consumers of soy in the world. And I would imagine if you run a communist dictatorship, you want to fill your people up with soy. Now, I'm going to tell you, I think American politicians love the fact that Americans eat a lot of soy. The reason for that is, as I've talked about on my health show and probably some outside of that, is that the term soy boy refers to a rather feminized version of a young male. And we have raised generations of people on soy, and I believe we have affected the testosterone levels, and it's why leaders love that. Chinese probably love to try to feminize all the men in China so they don't actually grow a pair and rise up against a brutal communist dictatorship. So they're shoving soy at them. I think culturally there's been a lot of soy in Chinese diets all along, but I would imagine if I were a leader, I'd really kind of like to, I'd like to curb the testosterone of the human, you know, the 1.3 billion people I'm trying to control from a central government. And I would imagine the same thing's happening here. The other thing about soy is not only are we loading our kids up with it, feminizing our young men, possibly exacerbating even breast cancer stuff because of the high estrogen levels that are created from soy consumption, as per my understanding of this, is that we also, to the American farmers, maybe you should stop with the GMO stuff. I believe, and I'm not completely positive about this, but I believe the European markets are shut off to GMO soy. Now, I myself am shut off to GMO soy whenever I can avoid it. I do not want something, number one, that reduces testosterone and boosts my estrogen levels. I have already implicated soy consumption in the man boob phenomenon we are seeing now. If you are currently suffering from moobs, I would encourage you to take a look at your soy consumption. And you probably don't know you're eating soy, but when you get home tonight, take a look at every packaged product that you have in your pantry, and you're going to see some form of soy in it. Everything from relishes and condiments to foods and prepared items. Soy is just in everything. But if you're, while I don't want the feminization estrogen properties of soy, I certainly don't want also on top of that the Roundup glyphosate wrecking my digestive system as well. So anyway, to the soy farmers, might be something you want to take a look at, although Monsanto has had a stranglehold over the soybean production in the United States for quite some period of time. Did you see the footage of Donald Trump coming home from the rally in Tulsa? He got off of the helicopter. The media jumped on it, as the media does. He looked dejected. His tie was untied. Kind of came slow off of the thing. Obviously, the rally in Tulsa, regardless of the reasons for it or whether they were duped by a bunch of TikTokers or it was the media hysteria around COVID or protesters, whatever it was, the fact of the matter is that rally did not go as Donald Trump had hoped. Now, I will tell you, I'm a healthy 52-year-old male, and I'm not sure I could keep up with Donald Trump on a daily basis. The man is full of a ton of energy, but he might have just been tired that day. The reason I even bring it up was I found it refreshing. There's all these times where I see Trump in what I feel like are less guarded moments, when he appears to be a little bit more real, sometimes when he's self-effacing, makes little kind of jokes about himself, just kind of plain spoken, just kind of having a laugh with people. These moments are caught every now and then. I believe so much of Trump is packaged, you know, he's trying to build a brand, and one of his brands is everything I touch is the best, you can always expect the best, and even his posture sometimes is, you know, crosses his arms and gets a scowl on his face. I've seen him come off that plane. It just looked very real. He did look tired, but he didn't look like he was trying to impress anybody. He didn't look like he was trying to project some kind of an image. I actually found it kind of refreshing. And I think if Trump would have allowed people to see more of that. Now, of course, I know the media's twisting it. Ah, look at that. He's beat down. I mean, he had a MAGA hat in his hand. It was kind of crumpled up. His tie was undone. But to me, it was kind of like, oh, that's a normal human being right there. He's had a long day. I guess he's flown back from Tulsa back to Washington, D.C. in a day. It would wear me out to just fly to Tulsa and come home just for a business meeting or something. He had to put on a rally and deal with all the political implications of it. But anyway, one of the reasons I bring it up, this is going to be shocking to some people, maybe unwelcome to some people, but I got to tell you, I think Donald Trump should just quit. Now, that doesn't come from me out of any level of hatred for Donald Trump. It just seems at this point, why does he want this gig anymore? And I don't know what people are expecting out of a second term. But I don't see things getting any better. I've been very discouraged with what's happened. But, I mean, you know, he gave it a try. I think the election cycle is setting up to be so incredibly hostile, and another 4 years would drown us in this hostility. Again, if I thought I was going to see something come out of it, then I would maybe say, well, soldier on through, we're going to make it. But I got to tell you, I mean, if the reason for the first 4 years was that, you know, he couldn't build the wall because of the Democrats, he couldn't do this because of the media, he couldn't do that because of the Supreme Court hates him. I mean, there's all kinds of things. And none of these things are going to change. And he had such a great life. Now, I'm a little bit less inclined to just admire him for dropping his private life and becoming president when everything was going great, because I believe he does have a very large ego. I don't think I'm breaking any news to say that. And I think becoming president of the United States is about as big a boost of an ego as you can. So while he did sacrifice his what was really just a fantastic life, I think he imagined the presidency as something different. I don't know he really saw it as a giant sacrifice. I would imagine he saw it as achieving the pinnacle of all success throughout his life. I don't think he came into that with an idea, though. I've benefited from the American system. Now I'm just going to serve. No, I think he did this as some level of accomplishment for himself. But if you do the thought experiment, if Trump just stepped aside, and I'm not saying he has to, and I know this angers some people, but if you just look at it kind of objectively, you stepped aside and. Now, my preference would be a Rand Paul. I don't want to go back to establishment Republicans in there. We solve nothing. Everything gets worse. I can understand some of the chaos around Donald Trump serves actually a purpose in breaking people's faith in some of the institutions that he has challenged verbally. It's just that he hasn't been able to affect the change. The government's bigger. The Pentagon's bigger. Education Department is bigger. The debt is bigger. The Federal Reserve is bigger. But I appreciate the fact he's gone in and called these things out, and maybe Republicans, in future Republicans, might hold some of these people's feet to the fire. I doubt it, but it's possible. But I'd love to see, you know, like a Rand Paul step up. And here's the reason, too. I talked about it some yesterday. I think Republicans will be swept into power. I absolutely believe that these riots and some of the unrest and the ridiculous attacks on every bit of history in the United States and the big tech censorship. There's a whole lot of independents out there that see this as just as insane as a lot of conservatives do. The problem is they just don't know if they can stomach a vote for Donald Trump. Now, I'm not sure he's going to win in the fall either, as hard as that is to believe, but apparently Biden has signed up for 3 debates, and those are going to be pretty fascinating to watch. And possibly very awkward, maybe like looking at a bit of a car crash over and over again. But I believe Republicans would sweep into office. I think actually the polarization that's come around Donald Trump, whether it's his fault or not, it's a reality of the situation right now. It may end up costing Republicans a lot more than they're prepared to do, and the left may actually take all power. But Donald Trump himself, he's 73 years old. Does he really want to fight this battle till he's 78 years old? When he could go back to his beautiful wife, lap of luxury, fade into the sunset, travel, do whatever he wants to do, rebuild his empire, or continue on with his real estate empire, what does he need this headache for? It's obvious that he's not going to be able to accomplish what he thought he was going to be able to accomplish. Now, maybe many of you think the second term is where it's at, but I started thinking about it kind of in the studio on the way here as I dared to even think about entertaining the idea of talking about the fact that Trump stepped aside. And I don't know there's ever been a situation, but I gave it 60 seconds worth of thought. Maybe someone could tell me in a time when, you know, a second term was just dramatically different than the first term and a bunch of things just got done. Now, I have seen that William Barr said some results from the Durham probe are coming out this summer. So while I continue to have about zero faith that anyone of any importance will be indicted or arrested or anything like that, even if they were late in the summer, a couple of months, you know it takes years for these things to play out, which means that the Durham report, even if it did sometime before the election do some kind of a surprise, if Donald Trump does not win, if the Republicans do not win, it will end up being another case of just people getting away with what they've always gotten away with, which is just deep state corruption. So anyway, something to think about. It doesn't have any effect on anything. It's just we're to a point right now where the left is trying to hand an election to Republicans. I mean, they are trying to give it away. They put up Joe Biden, for God's sakes. They are burning down businesses and ripping apart history. They are lobbying to have former males participate in girls' sports. This is a layup for the Republican Party. I just actually think at this point, right now, while Trump's base is energized, that base will go to stop the left no matter who is put in his place. Now, I would be sorely disappointed probably with any candidate the Republicans would put up instead of Donald Trump. I'm not a Pence fan. Most of the leaders, it would have to be a Rand Paul type probably for me to really get on board. But I think as Republicans, you would sweep into office, House, Senate, presidency in the fall if you took out the controversy surrounding Donald Trump. Anyway, we're going to get to tech censorship when we come back. Some pretty amazing things going on. And we got a cancel culture coming for one of the ones who really deserves it. I love this boomerang. We'll be doing it in just a second. Stay with me. Mike Madison here. Have you heard about Lee Garland's latest offer? You know, he's the real estate agent with the Moving On team at RE/MAX Alliance who will guarantee the sale of your home. Well, he's up the ante once again, and not only will he guarantee the sale, but he wants the opportunity to offer you cash before you ever even place it on the market. That's right. Lee Garland with the Moving On team at RE/MAX Alliance is and represents cash buyers who are willing to buy your home as is today. Can you imagine not having to jump through a bunch of hoops, not having to scramble around to meet the buyer's needs, and not having to do repairs for some crazy home inspection? If so, call Lee Garland at 601-983-1130 or 601-941-2424 for more details on his cash offer and or guaranteed sale. Again, call Lee Garland at 601-983-1130, 601-983-1130 or 601-941-2424.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Phone number here, 601-879-0002. What do you think about my call for, or it's not even a call. I'm not calling for Donald Trump to step aside. It just seems like, I mean, for him, it just seems like a no-brainer. Why does he want this headache any longer? I'm going to talk about somebody. You know, that's one thing, and, you know, my bank account balance shows it. I don't have the same genetic predisposition to, you know, to sacrifice everything for money. It's just some of these people who work, whether they're in politics or in business, that work into their 80s and 90s. I mean, they may just love it. But it does seem like, you know, just to me, the way I'm wired, I look at somebody like Donald Trump and I just think, man, you built up a huge business. You're worth billions of dollars. You made it to president of the United States. You're 73 years old. Man, it's like Havasu time. Just seems like that's just a great, he's still in good health. He seems like he's got a ton of energy. Wouldn't you just want to enjoy some years with just no headaches? Give the business to the kids. They seem apparently capable of handling it. Be the patriarch who is there for advice and to do it. And then just enjoy your time. He's got a beautiful wife. He's got a young son. Just seems to me at some point you just call it a day. But I guess, you know, that's an addiction and maybe he just enjoys the game. And it's just something that, you know, many people do. Some of the good things that I've seen, now the Trump presidency, again, as I say, it's in some areas, it's broken down some institutions. People on the right, on the Republicans, are finally looking at the deep state. They finally realize that the Department of Justice isn't this rock solid law and order organization, are they? Corrupt to the core. That's a benefit of the Trump administration. The media, now, the media is especially bad now, but I didn't need Trump to tell me how bad the media was. I've known this for about 25, 30 years now. I think most conservatives have realized the left-leaning of the media. Definitely they've lost their minds more in the last 3.5 years, 4 years than they ever have before. But it's probably called some attention to the hypocrisy of the media, and that's a benefit of this, too. There is a downside to this, though. I think conservatives have gone to sleep during Donald Trump in many areas, particularly when it comes to things like the debt, the Federal Reserve, the bailouts. Republicans are not saying a word about the bailouts that are going on each and every day, and they dwarf what happened in 2008 to spawn the Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street. I mean, Republicans are completely silent on this issue. Tech censorship is another thing. Tech censorship in the time of Trump has really come to the forefront. Everybody's seeing it. Apparently, there is Project Veritas has now gotten in with a Facebook insider who's blowing the whistle and saying, you know, that they're censoring most of everything that they are taking off or that they're censoring on Facebook. 75-80% of it is all Republican conservative views. It's something we kind of already knew, but it's always good. You know, Project Veritas does some great work of getting in, getting inside footage, getting inside clips, so we really know inside the minds of what goes on in these big tech censorship things. The question I have for conservatives is, how much evidence does it take before we abandon Facebook? And it's kind of funny to me. It's a mental puzzle. Everybody, I believe, is kind of addicted to Facebook. We're addicted to outrage. We've built our bubbles. We like to reinforce each other. We share the same news. We scream at the same people. But it seems to me at the same time, why aren't conservatives deplatforming Facebook and Google? Now, I've talked about this kind of at length. I just recently finally took some action myself, so I wasn't continuing to be such a wild hypocrite. And I moved my Mike Madison page from Facebook. I closed it down yesterday. I canceled it. Let's see. I tried that one time before it resurrected itself, but I think it might have been my podcast automatically uploading to that page. So I stopped my podcast from feeding into Facebook. I've moved everything over to gab.com, G-A-B.com. It's a Facebook clone that does not censor people. It's a free exchange of ideas, and I think you'd really like Gab now that I'm getting more familiar with it and kind of surfing around on it. Boy, it's a whole lot of disaffected conservatives over there seemingly saying whatever they want to. I think you'd find it kind of refreshing. But I don't know why conservatives are not leaving these companies, and this is maybe the downside of the Trump administration, is you're waiting for Trump to fix it for you, and nobody will just take that step themselves. You know, every time you log on to Facebook, you become part of their product. They're watching what you do and what you talk about, and they're targeting ads to you, and they're selling advertisers on everything that they know about you. You have a free Facebook account. You can be like me. I was a hypocrite, and I said, well, you know, I don't ever pay Facebook for anything. But they were not giving me something out of some altruistic idea that they really wanted the Mike Madison Show to have a platform, and they just wanted to be good guys to allow me to reach people. No. They make money off of every single user that's on there, so you are actually propping up this company that you hate. Ditto with Google, ditto with Twitter, ditto with all these companies that we're so disaffected with. It's just funny to me. We're all waiting for the government to act against them. Break apart Google. So what happens when they break apart Google? Will you finally then not use Google anymore? I mean, I don't know what you're waiting for or what will happen if you won't use Google after they're broken apart. You use a competitor of theirs. Why don't you use a competitor of theirs today? But the tech censorship has certainly been exposed. It is out there. I encourage you to check out the Project Veritas thing. It's very good on Facebook. Facebook, the one thing I will say about Facebook is pretty tough for a small business owner to not have a Facebook presence. People do find you there. I got to tell you, it's harder to find businesses almost if you don't know the name of a business. This is one of the reasons we want people to advertise on the radio, so people know your name and they can do a search directly for a business. But social media is kind of difficult. I mean, I understand small businesses being on Facebook, but as the average citizen, as a matter of fact, I've even got stories here about the fact that people are happier when they get off of Facebook. This was, I don't know, it's PHYS. I don't know if it's physics.org. This story was all over the place. It was at Google. I mean, it was on... was it the Guardian? It was all kinds of different places that took some of these studies and ran with them. The headline of this being, study finds users who leave Facebook are happier. And then it says, but less informed. If you're getting your news strictly from Facebook, we're seeing with the censorship on Facebook, you're not getting real news. I mean, you're not getting it from the mainstream media across the board, but certainly Facebook is not really informing you. And God knows there's a million other sources of news outside of Facebook. Maybe people use it for news. I don't know. I never have. But there's story after story, study after study showing that people who actually get off of Facebook are happier. Researchers studied 2,844 people who reported spending an hour a day on Facebook. They randomly assigned half the subject to deactivate their accounts for 4 weeks and paid them about 90 euros a week for their efforts. They monitored the accounts to see if there were any cheaters. And they monitored them to see how they felt during their abstinence from Facebook. Quote, if Facebook were like heroin, that number would have gone way down. That's not the case for Facebook. The great majority of the treatment group agreed that deactivation was good for them. We find that 4 weeks without Facebook improves subjective well-being and substantially reduces post-experiment demand, suggesting that forces such as addiction and projection bias may cause people to use Facebook more than they otherwise would. So, I mean, I'm struggling to find the reason that conservatives are actively using Facebook. Not only are they an evil corporation, not only are they censoring conservative voices, not only are you propping up this huge multi-billion-dollar corporations staffed by a bunch of leftists, but it's making you less happy at the same time. So what is it? I think it's addiction. It's got to be addiction. FOMO, fear of missing out. What are they saying on Facebook? Now, I know you get some information from there. I mean, I don't know. I just never used it, so maybe I'm not qualified to talk about it. It's just I look at the headlines, I see the censorship, I see the evil of these Silicon Valley, and then I see things that say you're happier if you're not on it, and I start to think, I'm wondering, it doesn't seem like I'm really missing anything. I got to take a quick break, but there's some other things too. Reddit has expanded their censorship out to even another area, which was actually pretty shocking. And then next hour we're going to get onto this cancel culture stuff. I'll start out with the big smiling headline for who the cancel culture is coming for. Stay with me.
All night.
Food allergies know how difficult it can be to find quality, affordable restaurants that cater to your needs. That's why the folks over at Your Pie have made a commitment to ensure everyone can enjoy great tasting pizza. Your Pie offers gluten-free dough, vegan, non-dairy cheese, and non-dairy sorbet. Just ask for it next time you're in line. Matter of fact, just mention any allergy you have, and the folks at Your Pie will go over the top to make sure you can safely enjoy their delicious food. That's Your Pie in Gluckstadt, where food allergies never stop you from being able to express your inner pizza.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own.
I did want to cover this one story about Google just to show you they are not invincible right now. I mean, they are still a company that requires clicks and ad revenue and things like that. I know we've kind of come to view them as this overarching invincible force, but there was a story. I mean, this is a small story. It's not anything, but it just does show you that there are some market forces that are involved with these companies. They are too big and too powerful. No argument from me, but I think there's more power in the people's hands than you understand. Google is expected to see its first decline in U.S. ad revenues this year as the coronavirus pandemic hit travel advertising. A market tracker said Monday, new research by eMarketer indicates Google will still be leading digital advertising, but with smaller share as the market evolves into a triopoly with Facebook and Amazon. Now, obviously, that's not entirely great news. I mean, we're still trapped in the Silicon Valley thing, but the reason that Facebook has so much ad revenue is why? Anyone? Because you're using Facebook. Because they market out how many users they've got. They tell every advertiser, this is how many eyeballs we can get on your ad. So you are the product for Facebook. It is, to me, it's starting to feel a little bit like whining. A little bit like whining that we can't stand these Silicon Valley things and keep doing business with them. There was one other story in here I wanted to see, or one other thing. I don't want to bother to go through it. It says Google has been growing at a slower rate than the overall digital ad market since 2016. So this year will continue a trend of Google losing digital ad market share in the U.S. It also talked about the fact that because they're travel sites, and I've told you about this before, if you want to fight Google, at least in a small way, if you're still stuck on using it, The first couple of links when you search for something are ads. Don't click on those. You pay Google and you charge the companies who are. If you just scroll down, I mean, it's just. I'm going to do it right now. Watch what. Let's see if you can hear it on my mouse here. It's that little scroll down. You scroll down like 4 inches, and you can click on the exact same link without actually giving Google any revenue. Reddit too. Reddit, from what I understand, has just got to be the biggest time suck out there because I know some friends who get on Reddit and they say they can get into some of these subreddits for hours. I don't use Reddit. I don't understand Reddit. Again, just never gotten into it, but I'm sure it's a very popular site. Condé Nast, who now owns Reddit, Condé Nast Reddit on Sunday started issuing temporary bans against users for upvoting. If you just upvote something, and it's got a screenshot here by a user that's got the handle Watch Reddit Die. This is a subreddit which chronicles Reddit's aggressive censorship. Anyway, this is what Reddit sends out to people. Your account has been suspended from Reddit for breaking the rules. Your suspension will last 3 days. You recently upvoted a post or comment that was determined to be against our policies. Abusive content is not acceptable on Reddit, nor is engaging with it. Please be thoughtful about the comment that you interact with. And then this is my favorite thing about big tech companies right here is this last line where it says, this is an automated message. Responses will not be received by Reddit admins. Meaning, there is no recourse. There's nobody to complain to. That is the sit down and shut up slave line of the whole message there. But now on Reddit, you can actually be censored and then put into Reddit jail for 3 days just for merely interacting with a post that they deem offensive. Now, I got to tell you, I don't know what is left to do. I mean, and the thing is, I'm old enough. I can kind of understand maybe younger people who've grown up in this culture where they don't understand there's a world outside of social media. But I grew up without it and really I haven't used it much. So I don't have the addiction level a lot of people do. I understand that. But there's a whole world out there where you can find news and interact with people. I did this weird thing. I went out to a locally owned restaurant on Friday night and had dinner with 5 friends. I didn't look at my phone. This was an interaction. We talked about current events. We laughed and joked about stuff. There's a whole world outside of Reddit and Facebook and Google. To younger people, they may not even understand that, and I kind of get that. You grow up with something, but for those of us that are over 40 years old, for the love of God, what is social media and the big tech giants right now? What are they giving you right now that is just important to your life? At this point, I don't know there's anything left to do but dump it across the board. I'll be right back.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Phone number here, 601-879-0002. You can also reach me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com. Want to yell at me? You can also get the show as podcast. You can go to themikemadisonshow.podbean.com. I haven't found out if Podbean is a radical leftist organization yet, so I continue to host my podcast there. It does go to Apple Podcasts, largely for some level of convenience. That's where I get most of my podcast stuff. I have found out that Spotify is some crazy left-wing network. I can't even remember what the headline was last week about Spotify, but apparently they've done some cancel culture type stuff, which we're going to talk about now. The cancel culture is just such a loaded gun that the left has been throwing around. Now, I'm going to say something about the cancel culture. We're seeing this right now, right, about it is being used very harshly against a lot of people on the right. Really got big. Matter of fact, I may find a clip about it. It's pretty interesting about how they got started and some of this online activism. You know, they're going after Tucker Carlson's advertisers. They went after a lot of college speakers. Milo Yiannopoulos, he was one of the first real casualties of the cancel culture, where across all of Silicon Valley, they canceled everything he had, kind of depersoned him. Then we saw Alex Jones go down. We've seen this used against the right. But I will tell you, and this is why people need to be so careful with using tools against their enemies that they would never want to be on the receiving end of. Where did the cancel culture really get its start? Does anybody know? Do you remember who the first groups were that really went out to just deplatform someone? And it was really before social media and YouTube and all this other stuff. But to get them kicked off of television, to strip them of their advertisers, to really go after them and get them knocked off. Do you remember the original group that did that? It was the evangelicals. Now, I'm not saying that to criticize evangelicals. I'm just telling you. It is very difficult for me, as I try to duck and weave around hypocrisy constantly, to not say that this whole movement, maybe I'm wrong, but the first group that I really remember targeting someone's advertisers because of something that they said or did and trying to get them fired was largely the religious community that might have taken issue with some particular personality on television, and they went after their advertisers brutally. Or if there's a magazine that somebody disagrees with, then the religious groups might go to places like Walmart or some of the big store chains and threaten massive boycotts unless they remove that magazine. Now, you may say, well, yeah, but we're always right about those issues. We're just trying to stop X, Y, and Z, and that's moral, and that's good, and we're on the right side of things. Well, that's fine, but what I'm saying is you're unleashing. It's like executive orders. You love it when your guy does it, and then you're so outraged when the next guy does it. How dare they go about around the Constitution? And, you know, and the cancel culture, as far as I can tell, and again, if I'm wrong, let me know, it really got started with the right that decided to target these people on television. Again, did I probably agree with them on a lot of the cases? Sure. But you just be careful what you wish for. We're always so ready to use a weapon against the other side, never thinking about the fact that we're setting a precedent with that weapon. A lot of people love to see the blue states get really heavily taxed. You got very excited when in the tax reform bill that the Republicans passed where they disallowed state taxes to be deducted in these high tax states. That'll show them. Seriously, conservatives are wanting to use excess taxation as a weapon against just anybody that lives within the borders of a state? There's a lot of good people in New York State that are not radical leftists that are stuck with this extra taxation, double taxation. But conservatives cheer for it because it gets at the, you know, it hurts some liberals in New York, so we're happy to sacrifice the entire state and hurt everybody there because they disagree with our politics. I mean, you know, it's just this idea of weaponizing things and then being shocked by the blowback. Now, this is all equally for the left, and that's what makes me smile today and got to this cancel culture segment in the first place, which is cancel culture is coming for one of its own, as it will, to all you people on the left. Just like I'm telling evangelicals and conservatives, you used the cancel culture, and now it's being used against you. It's been weaponized against you. Well, to you people on the left who are enjoying your day in the sun, canceling all these conservatives and destroying them, careful what you wish for, because it will come for you. None of you are pure. And that brings me to a story that gave me a smile today. Cancel culture is coming for Jimmy Kimmel. The late-night talk show host has been under fire recently after an old interview involving him and Megan Fox. And apparently in this one, it was about the fact that Megan Fox was essentially, as a teenager, sexualized, put in a bikini and high heels in a movie. Now, we know that's not any surprise, but he's under fire for that. But it gets worse than that. He apparently was using the N-word in some videos where he did a parody. It's called, put out a video called Christmas Time in the LBC, the takeoff on something Snoop Dogg did, but he apparently threw around the N-word that ends in an A, not an R, but the N-word ending in an A constantly. And then it got even worse than that when they pulled up an old skit of him. Now, I don't know how he survives this. I would just love it. He'll tearfully apologize. Let me go ahead and predict that. And the left, of course, will probably leave him alone after his tearful apology. This is Jimmy Kimmel, the sanctimonious. Now, a lot of people probably think I've got Trump derangement syndrome because I criticize Donald Trump all the time. I don't. I wish I had had a prior 4 years, 8 years under the Obama administration. You'd realize how brutal I am on a big federal government that seeks to dictate a bunch of stuff, and Obama was among the worst. I would have been so popular. Oh, I would have been so popular during the Obama administration. But this is Jimmy Kimmel. Not only we are about to hear the audio of how he represents Karl Malone from the Utah Jazz as a black man, but you can't see it here on radio. He is not only in blackface, he's in black body. He has got black makeup from, I can see the tips of his fingers all the way to the top of his head. He's wearing a Jams as opposed to the Jazz, who Karl Malone played for at the time, a Jams jersey. And it's a tank top jersey. His neck is black. His arms are black. His fingers are black. His face is black. And he says this. And boy, would I love to see Jimmy Kimmel have an uncomfortable swan song to his career based on this. Listen to this.
Night, Karl Malone look up in sky and say, what the hell going on up there? Do UFO live on other planet, phoning home like E.T.? Karl Malone read on TV about white people getting deducted by alien, sticking all kind of hell up their butt. And that's a damn thing. Now, Karl Malone never seen no flying saucer himself, but if he do, that's going to be a spooky time. That's why Karl Malone say, government got to step up and give 102% to keeping them little green men off this here earth. Because the day them dudes stick something up Karl Malone butt, that ain't going to be no good time for nobody. Especially Karl Malone butt. Listen up, E.T., you better stay the hell back. Nanu, nanu. Until next time, this here Karl Malone.
I got to tell you, I don't think you can do that, Jimmy Kimmel. That was not a flattering representation of the black community, of Karl Malone itself. He didn't sound particularly intelligent in that clip. It didn't seem like he was portraying an intelligent human being there. And he is head to toe. As a matter of fact, let me take a look at this clip. I want to see. Towards the end, they actually, oh yeah, he is to his ankles in black makeup. It was not just the face, not just the arms, not just the chest, not just the neck, to his ankles under his shorts. He has got his skin painted black all the way down. So there's your cancel culture coming around for Jimmy Kimmel. We'll see. I'm prepared to watch the hypocrisy of Hollywood and mainstream media that will give him a pass on that. But it sure would be nice to see it uncomfortable. At least maybe he'll have to go out and embarrass himself and cry a little bit in front of his audience. Jimmy Kimmel's just really has gotten to be one of the absolute worst on late night television. Although that's difficult. It's almost like the morning shows. You know, I'm boycotting NBC now after they went after Zero Hedge and The Federalist with one of their nut job reporters who tried to get them deplatformed from Google. Successful with Zero Hedge so far, and I don't know if they ever got The Federalist or not. So I'm searching around for morning shows, and each one is worse than the last. But late night talk show hosts are the same thing. I can't. Who's the guy who did Saturday Night Live? Is it Seth Rowe? Seth something? Seth somebody? I actually had the television on. I don't know what night it was. It was late night. So many things I run across in popular culture is just because I happen to have a television on in the room while I'm doing other things and something catches my attention. But I watched his monologue, which is in this. They're still scared of COVID, apparently, and scared to get to a stage. So they're still doing this stuff from home. So he's reading his monologue. It was about 10 minutes. It was just all anti-Trump stuff. About 12% of it actually had some humoristic qualities to it, a couple of things that were actually a little funny. The other 88% of it was just nothing but Trump hate. So, I don't know. We'll see if they take down Jimmy Kimmel. In the cancel culture, too, there are more victims than just people on the right and white people. This was very interesting. If you've seen this story, it's a couple of days old, but the relatives, the heirs, the descendants of Aunt Jemima are victims of the left as well.
Vera Harris is the family historian for the Richard family of Hawkins and could hardly believe a big part of their family legacy, the Aunt Jemima brand, was about to be erased from supermarket shelves.
A lot of people want it removed. We want the world to know that our cousin Lillian Richard was one of the Aunt Jemimas, and she made a honest living. We would ask that you would reconsider just wiping all of that away. She was discovered by the Quaker Oats Company to be their spokesperson.
Lillian became a goodwill ambassador for Quaker Oats and for decades portrayed Aunt Jemima all over Texas.
She made an honest living out of it. She toured around the state of Texas.
Here in the Fout community just outside Hawkins is a historical marker dedicated to Lillian Richard, who's recognized as one of several women who portrayed Aunt Jemima. And the family is proud of what she did.
She was actually considered like a hero in the town of Hawkins, and we are proud of that. We do not want that history erased.
Harris says her family feels that activism has gone too far.
I wish that, you know, we kind of would take a breath, just not just just get rid of everything, good or bad. It is our history. Removing that, wiping that away, wipes away a part of me. We're proud of our cousin.
Sorry, lady. You're just another victim of this scattershot approach to just rip down anything that might cause anybody the slightest bit of uncomfortableness. You know, it is just really, really sad, and I think we've crossed a Rubicon. I don't think there's any bringing it back, but, you know, these poor people, you know, and they're just more victims of this stuff as America thrashes around in this emotional state where everybody is hyper-partisan, hyper-emotional. There's no logic, no reason. Matter of fact, on that, I've got what I think is a fascinating, I think it was, is his name Brett Weinstein? He was on Joe Rogan talking about one of the problems plaguing the black community. I thought it was extremely thought-provoking. It's a short clip with a lot of what I think are a lot of implications, something I've talked about a little bit on this show, but he really kind of put it in a very interesting term. That, and I wanted to get to the clip of, and maybe even if you want to call in on this, I'm fascinated by this. What are people thinking about the Chick-fil-A owner right now? Chick-fil-A has kind of been that, you know, closed on Sunday, sticking to their guns company. But when it has come to Black Lives Matter, Chick-fil-A is not making any friends on the right. We'll play that in just a second, too. Stay with me. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com. You know, tomorrow will be Wednesday. I'll do my health show from 10 to 11 o'clock. I'm going to start. As a matter of fact, I think tomorrow, the focus of tomorrow's show is going to be mental health. I talk a lot about physical health, about your immune system, about your body, about, you know, ways to eat and keep chemicals out of your system to improve your overall health. I don't know. It's a neck and neck battle, I think, right now in the United States between our mental health and our physical health. Both seem to be deteriorating at a rapid, rapid pace. We've just gone nuts in this country. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Is it the food? Just the insanity? Is it social media? I don't know. Our mental health is just, whew, holy cow. Did you see this from the Chick-fil-A CEO? I think his name is Dan Caffey. Chick-fil-A is kind of stuck to their guns on some things that have made conservatives happy. They put out a product that people really enjoy. Boy, there are Chick-fil-A's out there. I don't know how much money they are printing from these places. Just, you just never see lines at fast food places. I've always been amazed, too, at the training of the Chick-fil-A staff. That's been one of the things I've noticed even more than kind of the social aspect of them. I really appreciate the fact that they are closed on Sundays and have stuck to that. Now, I like to go out and eat on Sundays, but I think it's great that they sacrifice those sales, and they do so well during the other 6 days of the week that, unlike other chains, maybe they don't even need a seventh day of sales because they've got their operation down. Their employees are almost always very friendly, very upbeat, very, I don't know, there's just something about the training of a Chick-fil-A staff. I've never really been able to figure it out. I've actually talked to some employees. I don't know if they set the expectations, if they create a great culture. I don't know what it is. And maybe some are not so great, but the ones I've gone to, almost every one of them, it's just they seem to be on top of their game. But it is the cultural aspect of Chick-fil-A that has kind of endeared it to the right, particularly the stuff on Sunday. I believe they have taken some stances against LGBTQ stuff that people have appreciated. But when it comes to Black Lives Matter, did you hear this thing? I'm going to play this, and it doesn't quite do it all justice. I'll have to narrate just a tiny bit of it. This is the audio of CEO Dan Caffey from Chick-fil-A meeting with people on Black Lives Matter.
Some of our closing moments here, but a story that was shared with me by a dear friend who shared with me about a revival that was taking place at a church in Texas. And at that revival, on the front seat was an older African-American man that was sitting there. And this young man got up that was there in that service, and he'd been so gripped with conviction about the racism that was in that local community in a small town in Texas that he took a shoe brush and he walked over to this elderly gentleman and he knelt on his knees and began to shine his shoes. And tears began to flow in that service. It was an attitude of conviction. So I invite folks to just to put some words to action here.
Now, he is getting up right now with his shoe brush, and he is going to go, and let me see if I can see who this was. Anyway, he's getting up with his shoe brush, and he is going to reenact this by buffing the shoes of a black man.
And if we need to find somebody that needs to have their shoe shine, we need to just go right on over and shine their shoes. And whether they got tennis shoes on or not, maybe they got sandals on, it really doesn't matter. But there's a time in which we need to have, you know, some personal action here. Maybe we need to give them a hug, too, brother.
And some stock in Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, put some money where your mouth is, too. I found that to be bizarre. Now, I don't know how other people interpret that. It was odd to me, and it seems to set an expectation where there needs to be. And look, man, I'm a graduate of public school. Racists are ignorant, and I don't care what color they are and what color they are against. Racists are just ignorant because what you do, it's like anything else. You group everybody into something. And I've done shows on this, and one in particular where I just said, you know, trying to stamp out racism is like trying to stamp out a-holes. There's just always going to be some around. Just stay away from them. If you spot one, steer clear. I wish we could get rid of a-holes in this world. They're everywhere. There seem to be more. Online, there's a lot. Now, in moving about society, there's relatively few. Number seems to be a little higher than it was maybe 20 years ago. But it's still, you know, most of my interactions with other human beings are good. When you get online, the number of a-holes expands exponentially. But this feels odd. You know, racism is disgusting. No, not any common sense, good thinking, a good hearted person says anything different. But to set this expectation to where somebody who's never done anything to somebody else needs to atone for something somebody else did to somebody else. Does that make sense? Is that enough of a word salad for you? Seems very odd, but I'm curious to know what the people who have been large backers of Chick-fil-A thought of that particular moment. Maybe people see it as something good. I don't know. It just really struck me as an odd thing to do, an expectation, a new way of interacting between groups of people. And the thing is that bugs me so much is that I grew up in Jackson, Mississippi, born in New York, but I've been down here most of my life. I went through public schools, three of them. We just interacted like normal human beings. I left my high school with white friends, with black friends. There was never a need to polish anybody's shoe. We just got along. We just were human beings, all at the same school, all cheering for the same football team, all having fun at the pep rallies, all hanging out after school. And that was enough. But now there's this idea that there's this atonement that I guess myself and anybody who has a particular skin color needs to make to somebody else who has another skin color. And apparently the leader of Chick-fil-A took it to an entirely new level. It's kind of odd. When I come back, though, I want to get to this. His name's Brett Weinstein. His brother, I don't really know a good bio on Brett Weinstein. He's kind of a social commentator guy. He's pretty progressive, but he's the kind of progressive, maybe more liberal guy that I can really appreciate, which is he can spot the insanity when it's happening. He does a very long interview with Joe Rogan that I think is very good. And he talks about the danger of this time. And this is a time where all of this chaos is really led by the left lashing out against whether it's George Floyd or Donald Trump or whatever else. But he can spot that. Even he's not a Donald Trump fan, but he realizes the insanity of trying to censor and deperson and deplatform and attack and tear down monuments and just take to the streets without any thoughtful thought about what people actually want, what the solutions are, just an emotional lashing out. Any liberal who can understand that this is going too far is somebody that should be listened to. But he has a kind of a breakdown on what's happened in the black community that has certainly not been addressed and doesn't appear to even be on the radar screen of most people in addressing it going forward, that I thought was really intelligent and very interesting. So I'll play that when we come back. Stay with me.
If you're considering renovations, remodels, or roofing, call on Tri-County Restoration. Do you have an insurance claim? We work with all insurance companies. Tri-County offers kitchen and bath remodels, wood floor refinishing, patio and sunroom additions, and is a GAF certified roofing contractor. And Tri-County Restoration can handle new construction for that home you've always dreamed of. Call Tri-County Restoration 601-856-2530 or visit our website, tcr.ms. That's tcr.ms.
We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. I just got word. Speaking of public school, graduated from Murrah High School, Roll Blue, of a teacher's passing there. Everybody's got that teacher that really made an impact on their lives. I actually have got several. But Joan Batt, she's now Joan Moore. She was 89 years old, but she taught the sales and marketing course at Murrah High School. Very interesting. You have the DECA Club, Distributive Education Clubs of America, I think it was, that I was involved in. Got all expenses paid trip to San Francisco. We took a bunch of trips to round competitions. It was actually the pinnacle. I didn't realize I had peaked when I was 17 years old, but I think I finished third in the nation in some kind of a business proposal contest there out in San Francisco. But she was a very impactful teacher. It's very sad to see her go. You know, we've got a lot of problems with the education system, and Joan Batt, as she was known back in the day when she was running DECA at Mara High School, was one of those bright spots in teaching, and she kept up with a lot of her students. I haven't seen her in a long time, but I know a lot of her students kept very close to her for years and years after that, so it's very, very sad to hear about Joan Batt's passing. But anyway, these things happen. This is a clip from a guy named Brett Weinstein. Now, I know his brother taught at Evergreen College. I think it was Evergreen College, not university. Evergreen College, which is in Washington, I think, where they did this whole thing. You know, they did the whole all whites had to leave campus one day. There was a takeover. There was a very wimpy college president who allowed this to happen, where essentially it was just racism on campus for a day. And Eric Weinstein, this professor, essentially refused to leave his post, refused to leave his office on a day where black students took over the campus and said all white people need to leave. Brett Weinstein, who's about you're about to hear right now, is also a liberal. You know, they've spent time in academia, and they're liberals, but they realize we've gone too far. I've talked a lot about what I see as the problem that we're seeing between police and communities. And it's not exclusively between police and black communities. Now, I'm not any police hater. Police do wonderful things, save lives every day, provide an invaluable service. Defunding them or disbanding the police is an absolutely insane idea. So don't misunderstand me. But I do believe that politicians and leaders have created a situation where the American people are over-policed. There's so many rules and laws and regulations, things where there is no victim, but people are locked into cages or fined or cited. And there's systems, too, where, you know, you may get a ticket for a broken taillight, but if you're in a poor community, black, white, yellow, brown, I don't care what color you are, if you can't afford that ticket, then you get a warrant, and then you get into the system, and then you may be put into a probation system that requires you to be somewhere every Monday at 2 o'clock, and if you don't show up, you're going to go back for 90 days. I mean, there's debt traps in our justice system right now that disproportionately affect poor people, be they minority or white communities. It doesn't matter. We are over-policed in this country. Now, you tack on that, and I've talked about this a lot on the show, too. You tack on top of that the systems that have been set up that have discouraged marriage to get the most in government benefits. You don't want to have two incomes in a home. You want to make sure it's just a one-income home, which has discouraged marriage. A lot of people talk about fatherlessness in the homes being a problem. And this is, now we live in Mississippi, which is a very integrated state, large community, a large black community, interspersed with the white community, and we go about our business 99.99% of the time with absolutely no problems. But there's plenty of poor white communities that fall into these same kinds of traps and the same kind of social policies that have been set up by these idiots in Washington, D.C., and politicians on state and local levels that have trapped people in poverty. And I got to tell you, politicians love you to be dependent. They can count on the vote of somebody whose next meal depends on a politician who promises you to get you that next meal. They love dependent communities, white, black, I don't care what color. But this was an interesting take on fatherlessness in homes as well, outside of just the policies set up to qualify for the most benefits from food stamps or welfare benefits, those kinds of things. And I play this because I want conservatives too, because conservatives, I think, have played a large part in this over-policing under the guise of law and order. And it suspends basically what I see a lot of conservatives, they're professing to like law and order. Look, I like an orderly society. I like safety and security in society just as much as anybody else. And I've got kids out there. I want them to be safe and secure. But the idea that because a politician or a group of politicians passes a law or an ordinance or a regulation, that enforcement of that law, just by the virtue of some politicians passing it, is moral, I think you're dead wrong. Just because something is illegal doesn't make it immoral. Now, people make some choices for themselves that may be destructive, but with these victimless crimes, I go back a lot to even seatbelt laws. Look, it's smart to wear a seatbelt. I always wear a seatbelt. Do I need to be pulled over and charged a couple of $100 if I don't wear a seatbelt when I'm not hurting anybody else? Absolutely not. And these kinds of little laws and regulations and rules for the people constantly force us into interactions with the police, and with more interactions between the populace and the police, particularly when on the end of it, you end up with a ticket. It's going to end up costing you a day. It does not make you look favorably on the police after a period of time. I'm not blaming the police for that. They're going out and they're doing what they are told to do. But listen to what the consequence of this over-policing is, and I'm going to point a lot to the drug war as well. Because the drug war has resorted into more police interactions with people on victimless crimes. You may not like drugs. I get it. Come up here and pee test me. I'm not some radical hippie up here telling you to go out and buy some weed. But there are consequences to that, and one is locking up a big portion of our population for crimes that are not with a victim, that do not keep anybody safer. They are micromanaging the behavior and the morality of people and has locked a bunch of people up. So listen to what this, again, this is Brett Weinstein. Listen to what the consequence of that has been.
Some of our closing moments here, but a story that was shared with me by a dear friend who shared with me.
Sorry, that's CEO of Chick-fil-A. This is Brett Weinstein.
Here's the part that I don't hear discussed. When you take men out of a population, it has a very predictable effect. You take men out of a population, it undercuts the bargaining position of women in mating and dating, right? So if you take men out of the population, it means that those men who are still present in that population are in very high demand. Now, men being men, if they're in high sexual demand, it is hard to get them to settle down. A man who has lots of options is much harder to persuade to become monogamous and participate in traditional family raising. So what that does is it creates an environment in which you have many more single-parent homes, many more children growing up without their fathers present, which of course hobbles the kids who are raised in that situation because humans are so difficult to raise. They're so costly in terms of time and energy and resources that one person has a much harder time doing it than a team of two people. And this sets in motion all of the things for which white society imagines that there's some cause inside of being black, when in fact it's a demographic process, a demographic process that unfolds very naturally if you remove a disproportionate number of men from a population and undermine women's bargaining position.
I found that pretty fascinating. I never thought about it from the context of you know, women's ability to lock down a man. If there are fewer men running around and they're in higher demand, then it is harder to get them to settle down with one woman. This is another consequence. I say this to those people, and I'm going to come. I got to take a break, but I'm going to come back. I'm going to play that clip again because I want people to listen to it in the context, because there's a lot of people, particularly on the right that I hear, they think that solving the problems of society is build more jails. Stack them like cordwood. This has a consequence, and we're seeing what that consequence is right now. You want to build a bunch of jails, which means you need to effect a bunch of arrests, which means you need to pass a lot of laws to get everybody off the streets that could potentially be a problem to somebody else, or themselves is the problem. Now, if somebody hurts somebody else, if you attack somebody physically, if you threaten them physically, or you try to take their stuff, boom, in a jail, that's fine. But it's the victimless crimes that have populated prisons, and the conservative side of this has always said, well, just build more prisons. You think that you can finally take enough people out of society that everything will be fixed, that everything will be fine. But what are you doing when you are locking up? And again, the U.S. does. Now, I don't know, China may execute all their people. Maybe that's why we've got a larger prison population than China. But for a country that is similar to the United States, a Western power, we incarcerate far more of our people than anywhere else. Is it because we are inherently defective and violent as Americans? I don't think anybody thinks that. It is because we have put our politicians in charge of not only enforcing rules against force and fraud, but against personal behavior. And then created a gangland structure around that, particularly when it comes to the war on drugs. But this is a consequence. Again, I'm going to play this clip again when we come back. This is a consequence of creating large prison populations. It's giving you the problems that you seem to want to not have the problems of. Bad relationship between the black community and the police. You want to send the police in to roust them for every single thing they could possibly lock them up for, to get all the troublemakers, no, regardless of what. But then, at the same time, you don't understand that all those interactions have ultimately a negative effect that's driving the hostility between the police and now calling for the disbandment of police departments. You see how this works? We need to start thinking a couple of moves ahead rather than the knee-jerk reaction, which is lock them all up, build prisons. I don't like to spend money, but if we're going to spend money anywhere, build more prisons. Well, you take more black men off of the streets, and you ruin their careers, too. I mean, you ruin their possibility. You know, you look at these kids who make a stupid mistake, and I know a lot of people who made stupid mistakes. A lot of my white friends made stupid mistakes and got caught with weed or cocaine or ecstasy in college. They are now doctors and lawyers and other stuff because their parents had the juice and the connections and the money to get them off and get their records expunged. But for people that do not have the means, their future's over. They might not be able to qualify for a decent job with a background check. Might not be able to get a nice place to live with a background check. You force them to stay in an underclass because you've destroyed their hope for the future because of some stupid personal mistake when they were young. I know a ton of very successful people that used drugs when they were young and stupid, and they would tell you the same thing. But when you start getting these people involved in the criminal justice system, you take away all those options on the backside. What do you expect them to do at that point? When nobody will hire them anymore because of this criminal record you gave them for a bag of weed they had when they were 19 years old, what do you expect that 32-year-old to do after he's had the door slammed in his face time and time again because of his arrest record? Anyway, I'm going to play this clip again because I think it's interesting to think of in the context of the fact that by taking a bunch of males out, you're making the males left in these communities more valuable, and it's tougher to get them to settle down and do what most all of us want, which is to reconnect and reestablish the nuclear American family. Be right back. All night
with the king. Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
I've only got a couple minutes left in today's show. I'm going to play this clip again because, you know, the thing we have right now, the trap that I see we are in right now is that everybody acts emotionally. It's like playing whack-a-mole, and we address symptoms. So same thing we do with our health. We don't stop and ask why we've got diabetes. We just find every symptom of diabetes that's manifesting itself, and we seek out a drug to treat that symptom. And we don't go back to the root cause, which is usually nutritional lifestyle stuff. It's the same with social ills. We refuse to think about what led us to this point. We just look at the symptoms and demand that we take action on the symptoms. We never solve anything. It's because we don't think, because these things aren't good for sound bites. They're not easy. I wanted to talk today about Trump talking about burning the American flag. I'll probably keep it to tomorrow. We're too obsessed with the easy stuff, something that sound bites can be, something that can fit in a tweet with some kind of level of solution. But the problems are deep and they require some actual thought. And the problem is leadership in this country is not based on thought. It's about appealing to your emotions and pandering, trying to give you some quick, immediate fix to something without, again, addressing the core problems that exist. It's not popular for me to come on a conservative talk radio and rail against the drug war, yet I keep doing it because if anybody, and I know a lot of people who have started to engage it intellectually and they come to a different conclusion than they would. Yes, drugs are bad, but you know what's worse than drug use? The drug war itself. The same way that alcohol causes a lot of problems in the society, but you know what was worse? The 1920s when they made it illegal. We got all kinds of new problems, gangs, bribed politicians, massive corruption, violence in the streets. At least back then, I guess we could still think our way out of a paper bag, and we reversed the prohibition on alcohol. And you know what happened? The alcohol gangs went away. What did they do? They moved to the other prohibited substance. We've been fighting that war on drugs now for over 100 years to a massive failure. But here's what happens when you fight that war on drugs and you take the black people. And this happens in white communities, too. He's just addressing this within the context of what we're experiencing today racially.
Here's the part that I don't hear discussed. When you take men out of a population, it has a very predictable effect. You take men out of a population, it undercuts the bargaining position of women in mating and dating. Right. So if you take men out of the population, it means that those men who are still present in that population are in very high demand. Now, men being men, if they're in high sexual demand, it is hard to get them to settle down. A man who has lots of options is much harder to persuade to become monogamous and participate in traditional family raising. So what that does is it creates an environment in which you have many more single parent homes, many more children growing up without their fathers present, which of course hobbles the kids who are raised in that situation because humans are so difficult to raise. They're so costly in terms of time and energy and resources that one person has a much harder time doing it than a team of two people. And this sets in motion all of the things for which white society imagines that there's some cause inside of being black, when in fact it's a demographic process.
And so, you know, on the conservative side of things, a lot of people look at it and they say, look, one of the big problems is fatherless homes. Well, do you realize that building prison after prison after prison after prison after prison, you're actually taking more and more fathers out of homes, or potential homes anyway? Our goal should be to address the problem while they're there and still functioning, get them help for whatever they need and get them back into the home and rehabilitate the family. But we've taken this stance where, no, if you get out of line, if a politician says something's illegal, we enforce it. Stack them like cordwood, build more prisons. It's not going to work. See you tomorrow.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.